Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Roll Route, to the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Susan Bradford, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is we continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption with Susan Bradford. The past few weeks, we've been everywhere from the Bible to the Rothschilds to Donald Trump to Michael Flynn. And today, did you want to talk about food and farming, Susan? First of all, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing very well, thank you. It's been a busy week, but I've made some new discoveries I'd like to share with your audience that I think would be really relevant to the food production issue.
I am always open to new discoveries. Innovation. We'll call it innovation. Is that what this is?
This was news that was forgotten in the 24-hour news cycle, but which should have been top of the agenda, I think, which reveals a lot of what we've been going through, provides a basis and a context.
Lay it on us. What's up? What got left out of the news? Because I've come to realize that most everything we're presented with today is a distraction. And I think that's what you just told us.
Yes, that's correct. So as part of my research for one of my upcoming books, I read a book. It's called The Twilight in the Desert, The Coming Saudi Oil Shock in the World Economy, written by Matthew Simmons. And Matthew Simmons was an advisor, an oil advisor to the Bush administration. And what he had reported is that in the late 1990s, the Saudis were overproducing their oil. And so what that meant is an end to the petrodollar. And so if you can imagine the ramifications. So back at the tail end of the 1990s, he was saying the oil would peak in about 2004, and then it would go downhill from there. And given that the elites had essentially kind of curtailed our own oil production, this meant that we would be facing some type of scarcity, you know, like manufactured scarcity, because everything touches oil. You know, oil touches everything.
Absolutely.
So what they were predicting, or what they were advising back then, is that we're going to have to end the automobile. We're going to have people stay at home, work from home. We're going to have to end livestock, because livestock involves, you know, processing the animals and so forth. And because they had set up these international supply chains where we produce part of, you know, our food here, parts all around the world, that with the coming oil scarcity that they had manufactured, they said the global economy would no longer be sustainable. And so this, I believe, was the pretext that the COVID was a cover for what this was. They needed to reset the economy desperately because the petrodollar was on the way out, and they did not believe that they had enough oil to produce to fuel the cars, to fuel agriculture, and so forth. And of course, COVID provided the pretext for them to, you know, slaughter the animals and then to bring in this new lab meat and as part of a sustainable development. So they did this under the pretext of climate change. But then we know, I can say, you know, from Matthew Simmons, that climate change is not the real reason. It was actually the overproduction of the Saudi oil fields. And the reason that they can't discuss that is that this petrodollar lies at the very heart of the allegedly, I would say it's fraudulent, the fraudulent international financial system that they've set up. And I can go into, you know, as we progress, you know, how they set this up. But they're trying to divert our attention somewhere else so we don't look back at what they did and how they brought us to this kind of precarious situation.
It reminds me, I know that I was in grade school, but we started talking about, so it had to be, I was born in 66, Susan, so it had to be 70s, you know, we were going to run out of oil, or there's a finite amount of oil. And now pretty much people recognize Earth continues to generate this lubricant, which we recognize as petroleum. And I know what we have in the United States for availability, but I also know that we've been pumping oil out of the Saudi region for a long time, just as much as we can. So it makes sense to me that this would be the case, but it doesn't make sense in that we know we have so many oil reserves that we don't tap here at home. And look what's going on in Alaska. I think Alaska's got enough oil to fuel the world, but we shut it down. We don't want to tap it.
Correct. It has enough oil to really fuel the United States for generations, really hundreds and upon hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So that's correct.
So it's all about the transfer of wealth and not allowing that wealth to go to people that want to work and make it happen. That's what you're telling me.
Yes, it's about the transfer of wealth to this small elite. Again, we're talking about those financial interests around the district of the City of London, which again leads back to the British monarchy and the Rothschild family. Yeah,
Yep.
ultimately.
All trails lead to not only a royal route, but the same families. And I might just add that it was a big revelation to me when I learned that 1 gallon of diesel fuel replaces 500 man hours of food labor production. And if you've ever
Wow.
hoed a garden, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't hoed a garden, you don't know exactly what I mean. But 1 gallon of diesel fuel replaces 500 man hours of food labor production. That's why this topic is important. So peel the onion, Susan.
Okay.
Because that comes from a garden, right? You saw my little pun there.
Yes, I did. I
Okay.
did.
It's
That
bad when I gotta
really
draw pictures of my own little puns.
Okay. Back in the 1970, well, late 19 of 1969 thereabouts, a great pool of oil was established or was discovered in Alaska. And Nixon very quickly put the kibosh on this because, like, it's going back a little further. At the we I guess we had first the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve was which enables this international group, international financial elites, to have control over our financial system. That was passed through. It was not actually passed through a congressional quorum, so that's kind of illegitimate. But nevertheless, they needed to put us on the gold standard in order to fuel the development of the world, in order to provide us with the capital that we needed for World War I, World War II. That enable these corporations to establish their monopolies, reorganize Europe, reorganize the world under their control. But by the late 1960s, 1970s, the value of gold could, like, if you wanted to sell your dollars for gold, there wasn't enough gold to go around, so they needed a new exchange. And they decided to peg the dollar to petro dollar to oil, so that they would have enough money to which to build their new world order. So they found a vast pools of oil in Alaska, Prudhoe Bay, late 1960s. The elites prevented, elites led by Kissinger, who was an agent of the Rothschilds, blocked production of that oil because they knew that the Saudis had these great, oil reserves, and they wanted to peg the dollar to the Saudi oil. And this was at the very beginning of where they're trying to enmesh us into a series of interdependencies where we as a nation would no longer be able to operate within our own self-interest. So, on the one hand, they would have the Saudis buy our debt, and then we would produce the oil. They would use the proceeds to develop their own economy. They would give contracts to our people. They were afraid that since we were, working with Israel, that Israel would potentially attack them. So we provided them a guarantee for their defense, and on the other hand, we're providing a guarantee for Israel's oil security. So these are interests we're obligating ourselves to that aren't necessarily in the American interest, but they're in the elite interest, where they can, get control of the international financial economy. So with the rise of the petrol dollar, we also have the decoupling of the dollar from gold, which gave rise to the petrodollar or to the fiat dollar. And that enabled our federal government and the Federal Reserve to, which is not the federal government, it's, run by the International Financial
Right.
District, to print unlimited amounts of money to develop the entire world, to give the elites their contracts, while Americans hold the debt. And this enabled them to launch any number of wars. And wars, of course, are not in the national interest. They're about securing natural resources for the elites. So the Saudis were at the beginning of this. One of the Saudi assets, who was intelligence assets, was a gentleman by the name of Adnan Khashoggi, who moved money around for the elites. So as we're printing money for these, like Imelda Marcos and Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines, for example, dictators, we have Adnan Khashoggi moving their money and assets around the world. That Marcos family are like placeholders for the elites. Within the Philippines, they were establishing a monopoly, the monopoly on the control of all of their industries, farming, etc. This is a kind of a template that they wanted to replicate throughout the world. And meanwhile, we're financing it through USAID and so forth. So we're also...
Susan,
yes,
we're
go ahead.
Pick it up right there with financing it through USAID when we get back with more. Okay. Roll Route, Turn It Loose. Susan Bradford, investigative journalist, bringing us what we need to know and brought to light what it meant to be the petrodollar. More after this. Let's take a minute and talk about beef. We're talking about certified Piedmontese. That's because Great Plains Cattlemen are working to produce the resources of this region to generate the most tender beef supply you can find. The best part of the deal, you don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. Full details and order at cpbeef.com. Welcome back, Trent Lewis, alongside Susan Bradford. Roll Route to the program. And Susan, we're going to pick it up right there with the Philippines and USAID. Am I saying? Yeah, UAID.
USAID.
But I have to tell you that I've heard about and I've discussed and I've had people walk me through the petrodollar, but you just condensed it and explained it, our transfer from the gold standard to the petrodollar in a very simplistic way like nobody has before. So that I think that made perfect sense. All right.
I'm glad.
Pick it up on the space holder, the Marcos, or what was Ferdinand? What was his name?
Ferdinand Imelda Marcos. In order to kind of consolidate the wealth, we have the elites. And I'm talking about principally the Rothschilds' financial interests around the city of London. They use placeholders. For example, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk are probably not billionaires. They're holding, you know, the wealth for these people. The Russian oligarchs are holding the wealth for Putin, who's holding the wealth for the Rothschilds. So you never really know where the money is going. It's always a flood, you know, moving around the world. Going back to to Marcos, the chief agent who was moving money around the world was Adnan Khashoggi. He was also an arms trafficker. We have the taxpayers raising money to finance Lockheed Martin, Boeing. Adnan Khashoggi would then bribe governments like the Saudi government to buy Lockheed Martin, to buy their weaponry. And in turn, we have the foreign governments, you know, continue generating profits through taxpayer subsidized corporations. We have through that transfer of technology, transfer of arms, we're essentially arming our adversaries, strategic adversaries, giving them the pretext to then generate war. Through war, again, you have the ability to for the elites to work through them, to seize natural resources, to generate contracts for the elites, and in turn to leave the Americans holding the debt for, you know, for what they generate. You have like the Saudis, the petrodollar is at the center of this global financial system. By the late 1980s, early 1990s, since the oil companies were trying to generate as much money as possible, as much profit as possible from those oil wells, they had overproduced them. And so as you kind of merge into the late 1990s, they realize that they do not have enough wealth to, to kind of create their new world order from that petrodollar. And so they needed an entirely new financial system. So you have late 1990s, the rise of communist China. This is the period in which communist China, which was created by Wall Street, and we can go into that in a different show, was being brought into the World Trade Organization. This enabled them to kind of continue their China agenda. And the China agenda was launched at the end of World War II with the goal of elevating communist China to lead the New World Order. This was going to be their global marketplace, a global engine. China is on the rise, and they know that they have to move away from oil and to this new energy economy, this electric economy. But the problem was that people were dependent upon oil. So they had to find a reason to kind of move away from the, you know, dependency on oil over to this green alternative. And I think that's when they began to promote the promote climate change. They were scaremongering, they were desperate. You know, if we don't address climate change, everything's going to fall apart. But I don't think excuse or their concerns had very little to do with climate change and more to do with this decreasing or limited supply of the Saudi oil. In turn, they needed to kind of reorganize the financial system. And I think that's why they're moving into, you know, cryptocurrencies. And remember the first cryptocurrency, I think Bitcoin, they were trying to, you know, create a currency out of nothing that was created by a new type of energy that you could produce, you know, in a lab or, you know, through a different type of organization. So I think that's what we're dealing with. Go ahead.
Let me interrupt here because I have something that ties right into this, and this is the oldest thing. And it's funny, Susan, how this week it's all come back to me through a series of conversations, and you just took me there again. So does the name Maurice Strong mean anything to you?
Yes, it does. I recognize the name. Can you remind me of who he is?
Maurice Strong was a vice president with the United Nations.
Right.
He was also on the board of directors of the Humane Society International. Maurice Strong, everybody will remember, if you're our age, everybody will remember the United Nations oil for food scandal. Mm-hmm. It was Maurice Strong who smuggled $1 million out of the United Nations in that particular situation. Now, Maurice Strong had the idea in 1973. It all comes back to the same
oil shock.
Absolutely. It comes back to the same period of time. In 1973, Maurice Strong said, if we can convince people that there's a climate change, we can pull this forward. He's the one that organized the 1992 United Nations Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. He then got caught in that oil for food scandal with the United Nations. And you're never going to guess where he went to work after they got rid of him at the United Nations. He went to communist China and started the China Carbon Trading Corporation and patented the ability for everybody to trade carbon. He was still working in the oil business and he was using animal rights, and he found a bunch of Russian oligarchs who had all these piles of wealth who left Russia, and guess where they went? China at the same period of time. So every bit of this comes back to the United Nations, Maurice Strong, funneling money. And I mean, to say one other thing that's going to resonate with what you just said, the Humane Society of the United States is how I cut my teeth in media, because I recognize that this entity with $180 million annually in revenue, they kept buying up all of these little bitty animal rights groups, you know, Compassion Over Killing, all these other little groups. Mm-hmm. Here's what they were doing, Susan. They were taking this Russian oligarch money. I've got all this documented in their history. They're taking all this Russian oligarch money. They would acquire some small nonprofit animal rights group. And when they brought that group in, they would funnel laundered money into that group, saying that they had acquired this money through this the consolidation of this other group, when in fact what they were doing was money laundering to gain control of the resources. And they had a direct tie, even though you couldn't see it, between animal rights, which wasn't about the animal, and climate initiatives, because these same animal rights groups were the first groups in the country to file lawsuits against individuals for climate change. It all ties together with everything you just described.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think that the price of oil is set not through supply and demand, but it's set at the World Bank. The World Bank, one of the architects of the shock therapy, which enabled the Russian oligarchs to acquire their wealth, was Larry Summers. And Larry Summers, in turn, during the COVID during COVID, was one of the leaders who was promoting permanent lockdowns. And he is also currently advising Sam Altman of OpenAI on how to create this new digital, AI, these smart cities, which are kind of moving away from oil. So you have like the same group of individuals.
The 15-minute cities is what they call them, the C40 cities. Yeah.
And that's like to ensure that everybody's within 15 minutes of, to acquire their food and everything that they need so they can stay home and not travel.
Yeah, so I have 1 minute left and then I'm going to rudely interrupt you again, Susan. So where do you want to send us in the last 1 minute of this second segment?
Oh, goodness. I guess I'll leave it up to you. There's not much to say in 1 minute.
Well, here's the thing is that Susan, I did not know where she was going to go today, but it's ironic that things have happened in my week that brought us all back to the number of people, the very few number of people who put in place these carbon trading schemes for tax credits. When in fact, if you stop and think about it, who needs a tax credit? It's not the everyday working people. It's truly not the farmers, the people working in the oil field. It's not the people who are mining. It's not the people who are logging. It's these same oligarchs, whatever an oligarch is, around the world that all lead to a handful of people controlling your and my life. That is what we continue to uncover. Roll out. We'll take a break. We'll be back with the second half. Susan Bradford, investigative journalist, after this. Let's talk about Simpson Farm Enterprises from Hayes, Kansas. The Apache sprayer technology continues to marvel those. I'll never forget Dave Nelson saying, you can just see so well. That's, if you can't see, you're not comfortable. You can see from this cab, you have complete control and the precision part of it. You've got an onboard computer, which is triangulated. You tell me what that means. And you have the ability to maintain control of pests like never before. Get more details, find out what Simpsons are in terms of service, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. Trust me, there's service like nobody else. SimpsonFarm.com. If you're in the northern part of the Great Plains, it's HighPlainsApache.com. It's the Apache sprayers eliminating pests, so you can brag that you're the best. Welcome back. Trent Luce alongside Susan Bradford joining us. She's an investigative journalist talking about oil, food, climate crisis, all manufactured to control our lives and generate more wealth for a few. Where do we go from here, Susan?
I'd like to take us back to Alaska, if I could.
Sure.
Because that's the center of a lot of what has happened. So once the oil was discovered in Alaska, the federal government under Nixon determined that they would have to resolve the land claim before they could develop the oil. So that led to the Alaska Native Settlement Act that resolved that claim. It dispersed $1 billion, 90% of which wound up in the hands of private individuals. But the little that was left over created Alaska Native corporations. And these were designed to give Native Americans some measure of economic self-sufficiency. But as they hobbled along, they weren't very profitable. They began to sell their tax losses. You were speaking earlier about the carbon credits. Mm-hmm. So this was an earlier form of that. And one group of individuals, men led by David Rubenstein, exploited those credits and formed the Carlyle Group. And they were able to make a hugely profitable business selling these tax credits. Now, are you familiar with the Carlyle Group?
I am. That's a name that I've not thought about for a long time, but I am familiar.
You are. Okay. This was a major government contractor, private equity firm, really the epitome of crony capitalism, a revolving door of government workers, private in the private sector with a who's who of the elite, with Soros, Osama bin Laden, Bush, Rumsfeld, among others. So we have an issue where a group is consolidating power around the Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group in turn contracts with a group called Kinetech. Kinetech is a major defense contractor within Britain, controlled by in which the Queen or the British sovereign holds the golden controlling share. This is a group that applies defense technology for civilian purposes, like the RDIF chip, which is at the center of this, you know, new electronic system. So as we approach the late,
just to interrupt.
Go ahead.
And also last week on Thursday, the RFID chip that you're talking about, it was part of their spending package to mandate that to be put into all cattle in the country, and $15 million authorized to make that happen.
They want to monitor exactly where your cattle go, how many you have, you know, how correct. Many each farmer has. That's
yep.
correct. So as we approach the late 1990s, a group of Zionists formed a group called the Project for the New American Century. Among their agenda, the agendas of PNAC, as you know, we have an issue with Saudi overproduction of Saudi oil. They wanted to become energy independent, like they're moving away from, you know, the petrodollar at that stage. And then within the Bush administration, we know, again, as we spoke last week, the Bush victory was determined in Florida with hanging chads. Among the advisors was who helped secure the victory for George Bush was Baker, an advisor, senior investor in the Carlyle Group. Somehow 9/11 happens on Bush's watch. Among the alleged terrorists was a gentleman by the name of Mohammed Atta. Mohammed Atta was, his father was a good friend of Mohammed Al-Fayed, the father of Dodi Al-Fayed, who dated Princess Diana. But Mohammed Al-Fayed had married Adnan Khashoggi's sister. So Adnan Khashoggi undertook all of his deals, his defense contracting deals at the Ritz-Carlton of Paris. So you have, you know, this group consolidating together. Mohammed Atta was last seen before his alleged trip to New York on the planes to attack the World Trade Center at the Sun Cruise in Florida. Sun Cruise puts him within the financial interests of the Seminole Tribe of Florida. That's a hotbed of international money laundering connected to the Trumps, to the British monarchy, to the Rothschilds. You have one of the financial interests to which the Seminole Tribe diverts or contributes to charities is through Hard Rock Heels, is the World Wildlife Fund, which gives money to Prince Philip, a trillionaire, the consort of Queen Elizabeth II. The World Wildlife Fund was also co-founded by Prince Bernard of the Netherlands, who is a business partner, again, of Adnan Khashoggi, who was involved in the Khashoggi with bribing the defense contractors, to purchase Lockheed Martin's equipment and arms.
For what it's worth, before we get far away from this,
yes, go ahead.
World Wildlife Fund was the first entity to propose putting an individual ID in cattle in the United States.
Wow.
Just wanted to add a little side note there. And a beef roundtable.
That's interesting. So we're talking about the same group of
here
people.
Here we are. We're the same thing.
Same thing. So
Lockheed Martin. You were at Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin. Okay. So in order for us to launch this, you know, war on terror, we, you know, the a pretext needed to be marketed throughout the country. So one narrative that they were promoting at the time was through false intelligence reports, was that Iraq held weapons of mass destruction, which we know to be false. Those false intelligence reports were promoted by the Iraqi National Congress through Ahmad Chalabi, through a group called BKSH, which had formerly represented Marcos, Trump's casino interests. And they're also now marketing the false intelligence reports that are leading us into Iraq. What happens with Iraq, in which we generate, I guess I think it was billions of dollars in debt for the American people, and spending that would not have been possible without the petrodollar. We use that adventure to grab oil for Israel because we're contractually obligated to provide for their security interests. So I guess moving further to the Trump administration, Kushner, Trump's son-in-law and the senior advisor, moves forward with this new agenda. He was working on the track and trace technology with Eric Schmidt, the former head of Google. They were trying to kind of use the pandemic as a pretext to bring upon this new agenda with smart cities, with the 15-minute cities, with cryptocurrencies, with a complete federal takeover of the healthcare industry. And one of Kushner's greatest achievements that he was very proud of is negotiating deals, including defense contracting deals for Lockheed Martin with the Saudi prince, and was the cover up of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Well, Jamal Khashoggi was related to Adnan Khashoggi. He knew what was going down. He was also very critical of the Saudi prince and of Trump. He was, murdered by a murder that was eventually traced back to MBS. Kushner covered it up. And after leaving the White House, Kushner was awarded with a $2 billion deal. It was like a new private equity fund that was gifted to him by the Saudis for a fund that he was reportedly not even qualified to run, but that appeared to be some type of payback for him. So again, you're looking at the same group of people.
I have a question that just kind of keeps nagging at me, and I don't have a clue what the answer is, but many of the things that you've talked about, and then the things that I've worked on, which are dealing with inadequacies and over-budgeted U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Environmental Protection Agency, the removal of the monetary from the gold standard, every one of these things, and I'm just tipping the iceberg, all began under Nixon in a short 4-year period of time under Richard Nixon. Why did all of this happen during the Nixon administration?
I think it in part because Henry Kissinger what became the Secretary of State, and Henry Kissinger had a back channel to the City of London. In fact, he was the individual who was working directly for the Rothschilds to advance the national security agenda as determined by Great Britain.
So that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, so he was their man.
Nixon had to go, probably because he knew too much. And so the whole, what was that called? Blackwater?
Watergate
came about to get rid of him.
Well, Watergate was interesting because according to a New York detective by the name of Jimmy Booth Rothstein, Watergate was about a sex trafficking operation. They broke into the Democratic National Headquarters to retrieve a black book that contained the names of very powerful individuals who were being compromised through like pedophile operations and different sexual compromise.
Well, I'm glad that we got that out of our government system.
Well, it's that never has been going on to today. According to a report that I read, the CIA was procuring young boys for the Saudi royalty. So they were trying to entice the royals to help them open up their oil markets to these oil companies. And apparently child trafficking was part of that, courtesy of our CIA.
Well, I don't think it's a secret anymore that the whole Epstein-Maxwell situation was a Mossad-led extension of what you just described, the entity that created all of those vulnerabilities so that you could hold people completely captive for what you wanted in elected positions like Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon.
That's correct. And I think it was interesting that the Epstein kind of rose to power around the time that the elites were trying to transition over to this kind of smart city AI agenda. And he was like leading the technocrats. He was kind of moving money around for them. He was compromising individuals. And of course, among his clients were Bill Gates, whose lobbyists helped secure a power for the Russian oligarchs, Larry Summers, as we've discussed, MBS, the Saudi prince, even Donald Trump, among other figures. So you're looking at, you know, an individual who is compromising our elites in order to advance this agenda, again, on behalf of the City of London and ultimately the Rothschilds.
Susan Bradford, we've got one segment left, and I know exactly where we're going to start because you've opened a whole new can of worms. We'll be back with more Rural Route after this. Let's talk about healthy living for a moment. Do you know God put nitrous oxide in the atmosphere at 78% of the atmosphere? Do you reckon that nitrous oxide leading to nitrates is important? No doubt in my mind he knew how important it was, which bodes the question, are you taking a supplement? NO2U.com, that's the one I take. It's beet powder, condensed, and available nitrate for you. N-O, number two, letter U.com. Trench your coupon code. Welcome back, Trent Luce, alongside Susan Bradford, joining us on yet another Thursday. She's an investigative journalist, bringing us information that just brings everything together and it makes sense. And the last thing that you brought together that makes sense is that we see this week there are five very wealthy folks who are selling an unprecedented level of their own stocks and their own companies, including the Walton families to the tune of billions and Jeff Bezos. But you said something earlier on that I didn't consider or didn't really have a handle on until you said it, and it makes perfect sense. The likes of Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos and all of these wealthy individuals are just placeholders, so to speak. And if you look at where they are currently, just today, there's news, and I think it actually happened 7 days ago, there's news that a Swiss airline is going to be the first to achieve net carbon zero, and they are purchasing all of these carbon credits, and they're being influenced by BlackRock, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates. And what is happening is these wealthy individuals who you're telling me are placeholders, people that are accumulated wealth so that they can make these things happen, go and say that they're going to invest in XYZ net carbon zero and buy these carbon credits, which is just the like a multi-pronged approach from the few families that control everything with the wealth.
That's correct. And you'll also see that they're investing in many schools, so that they're creating a new curriculum that will support the new climate change and so forth. So it's like a self-perpetuating cycle coming from many different angles, from apparently many different individuals, and yet they're all working together, you know, in service of the same hand.
And part of my team at Beck News, the TV broad network that we're with, did a story. I don't know if you've seen this. You should watch this series, Susan. It was called China, the Untold or the Conquest. And it walked through how the communist China oligarchs had invested money in the Confucius Institute at higher learning universities around this country, including Dickinson State University in North Dakota, where they were doing exactly that.
And it's interesting that among the advisors of the communist Chinese government is Bill Gates. And Microsoft helped launch Zillow, which is taking over our real estate industry. And Bill Gates also helped launch Bezos for Amazon. So you have these same kind of individuals, really all working together to create this momentum behind, you know, the takeover of the world's assets.
Which I have a complete side note that's not related to food and agriculture. Well, it is. It's related to energy. The governor of North Dakota is Doug Burgum. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about Doug Burgum?
Not too much. I would be interested in hearing.
Doug Burgum came really out of nowhere. He's a North Dakota native, but he created Great Plains Software. And he ended up selling Great Plains Software to Microsoft and became a vice president for Microsoft for an extended period of time. And then he retired. And all of a sudden, after he retired, by the way, Microsoft has a pretty large platform footprint in Fargo, North Dakota. So he was vice president there. He retires, and before you know it, he announces he's running for North Dakota governor. His largest contributor is none other than his friend, a guy named Bill Gates. And so as he wins the first election as governor, he wins the second election as governor, again, Bill Gates, his largest contributor. When he announces that he was going to run for the president of the United States, he had two people that literally stepped up and said, we are going to give you unlimited funds for your presidential campaign. And those two people are Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates. So two of the wealthiest individuals in the United States, and Doug Burgum did not pull off any more of a footprint than he did in the presidential primary. I just had to scratch my head and say, well, what was that whole charade about? Because clearly they didn't want him to win, or he would have at least made a bigger stint.
That's interesting. Just off the top of my head, without knowing all the facts, I would think that they were trying, you know, obviously trying to advance him as somebody who would serve their interests. But I think there may have been circumstances around that election that would have brought the spotlight back to Microsoft and these other interests that would have maybe reflected unfavorably upon them or created some type of liability for some of maybe their business conduct.
That's interesting, because clearly you don't know the latest development. The latest development is, surprisingly, Doug Burgum pulled out of rerunning for a third term as North Dakota governor, which shocked everyone. But what you just said could absolutely be the truth, is that additional scrutiny and looking into what's really going on at Microsoft and how the Microsoft cloud controls who's elected anyway. That's the real point that I didn't bring out, is that we know that most of the voting machines use a Microsoft cloud and the algorithms are manipulated there. So they could have won this election if they want. But North Dakota is significant, even though nobody lives there, less than 1.7 million people, actually less than 1.2 million people. No, I think there's 800,000. Nebraska is 1.7. North Dakota is 800,000. But it is one of the top states in food production and second in energy production. And that's why it's relevant.
Yeah, that is relevant. And we know now that Bill Gates is buying up all the farmland. They're trying to, you know, push the small producers out of business. I think Warren Buffett has sold a lot of his stock, and he's being poised along with the rest of these billionaires to purchase, you know, our land and assets, real estate, once the market crashes, what they hope will crash. Is that kind of what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I don't see Warren Buffett in the market for land. He continues to buy the resources that make land usable, such as trains and pipelines. The number of pipelines that he owns is unbelievable. He owns three significant energy companies, including Nevada Energy, which has lied to the American public about utilizing renewable energy from the Nevada desert for the Super Bowl. But he took in $3.5 billion with Berkshire Hathaway. And I'm just blocks away right now from where his office is. But Susan, he took $3.5 billion from the federal government in tax credits just for wind alone last year, only for wind subsidies, $3.5 billion. So these people all continue to be the problem.
They do.
In the last 5 minutes, just to give you a clue of where we're at, how does all of this tie even more into our oil and food for our future?
I really think that we in America, you know, as you've stated as well, we have the land to produce all the food that we need. We have the resources to produce all the natural resource and oil that we need. I think we need to share the knowledge of the alleged fraud of these individuals, how they have hijacked our economy, and then take the appropriate steps legally and peacefully to restore our governments, restore our economy. Because I think that we have all that we need to make this, you know, to make our country work. That would be my thought, and that's part of the reason that I've been trying to kind of expose the fraud behind these individuals.
The greatest statistic that I've ever uncovered, because So many things that are happening today are because we cannot continue to feed this growing population. Well, in 1920, the population of the world was 2 billion. And 80% of the 2 billion were considered food insecure around the world. In 2023, the population is in excess of 8 billion people, so four times greater in its population. And only 20% of the global population is considered food insecure. So we've increased the population fourfold and decreased by the same exact fourfold the number of people that are food insecure. So the truth of the matter is that if we utilize the resources we have in terms of land, water, and fuel, we can continue to feed an ever-growing population. And that's the story we need to continue to get out there.
I entirely agree with you. And I think the federal government is even providing charities with the wherewithal to distribute produce from our own farms around the world. So if we're able to do that, I'm sure that we're more than able to feed our own people and then some.
Yeah, that was a burr under my saddle as well, as I'm supportive of our troops, our veterans, as much as anybody in this country. We, during the Iraq and Afghanistan situation, the wars that we were in there, we had National Guards from Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa going to Afghanistan and developing what we have here in a land-grant institution in terms of teaching people how to grow food. I think that's wonderful. But we were committing our own resources to develop their land-grant institution when our land-grant institutions are starving for funding. It made no sense whatsoever.
I agree with that. And it's also kind of disturbing to me that we have a large degree of food insecurity among the American people, largely due to inflation. Yet at the same time, our produce, our grocery stores and executives are making record profits. So how is that possible? And they're accounting for the need to raise the prices to such an extent, you know, due to inflation. But I'm not sure that it is inflation. I think there may be a price gouging.
Yeah, it's their profits at inflation created by policy and greed. 1 minute, Susan, we have not done due diligence today. You've authored some books. Where do people go find those books and what are they called?
Thank you. You can find my books through my website and on Amazon, SusanBradford.org. You could also link to my Substack where I break a lot of news about global developments there through my Substack. And if you want to learn more about how Kissinger set up the New World Order through kind of meshing the United States and interdependencies, you can learn about that through my book, The Shadow Dragon. And that's also available through my website, which is SusanBradford.org.
And I might point out just as a how many of the people we talked about today, it was announced have just left Earth in the past 2 months?
That's very interesting. Quite a few of them.
Yeah, that is quite interesting. I plan to stick around and see what it all means. Thank you, Susan. Good to see you. See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. For Susan Bradford, I'm Trent Lewis. Both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route. Great Plains cattlemen working together to produce that tender beef supply that I suggest you try. And when you do, you're going to say, hey, I want more of that. CPBeef.com. Speaking of certified Piedmontese, there is a Lone Creek farm at York, Nebraska, exactly where we will be with the Free Soil Coalition on Monday night, March 18th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the York High School. Angel Cushing from Kansas, Carla Lems from South Dakota, and Curtis Junt, who spent a lifetime in the oil and gas business of the Bakken of North Dakota, will be at the York High School meeting, Free Soil Coalition, March 18. It's all about property rights and standing up to liberty and our freedom, just as Susan Bradford walked us through.